Blog Talk Radio.
Only on Erie House, Old Timey Radio, you hear the show start with two cackling old guys who are giggling like children, like giddy little children being naughty in the classroom, which is pretty much what we're doing. Good evening and welcome to Erie House, Oldie Timey Radio. I'm a host of sorts, or out of sorts, or sort of a host. I don't know. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here with...
I'm confused now, but I am Dave Binkley from Weird Digital Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And this, of course, is the goat.
And I think that's all you're going to get, other than an occasional meow from Mighty Joe Young over here. who's obviously listening in, as he seems to every Friday night at 6:30 Eastern, when we present some fine old-time radio programs. Our theme tonight, musical murders.
Yeah.
Actually, not just tonight, for the weekend. Yeah,
on weekend of musical murders. Wow.
Yeah.
I've killed a lot of songs in my time, but it's not the same thing, I don't think.
Yeah. And we welcome Fogsbane to the chat. Hi. And don't worry, we won't ever change that. The Shadow, Inner Sanctum, and Suspense tonight.
And Suspense has good old Vincent Price in it tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I can read that title on the air of that particular show. It's got a bad word in it.
No. Fugue.
David! David, our rating.
F-U-G-U-E, Fugue. Oh, Fugue.
David! I'm shocked and appalled.
Fugue. Fugue. No. Fugue. Oh. All right. Come on, Dale.
Oh, that's right. Our theme is music. I should have known that.
Silly boy. It's a conceptual composition in which a short melody or phrase, the subject, is introduced by one part and successfully taken up by others and developed into interweaving the parts. I guess it's like row, row, row your boat. I guess it's not like that.
Yep. And that one's going to be
merrily.
Featuring the great one, Vincent.
Yes, Vincent. And he doesn't fugue around very often.
No. Well, we certainly
do. He did a lot of things, but he didn't fugue around a lot. No, he didn't.
With all this giddiness, you would think Gar is here, but nay, he is experiencing... Oh, technical. I thought that was a dirty
technical
word. Technical difficulties.
No. Put your glasses on, Dale.
For a variety
Gar
of reasons.
Started digging into his brand new computer that he's had for 6 months just yesterday. And now he's ripped out his old computer, so now he's stuck until he can get this one put together. So
going to be another big storm coming out of Florida. This poor guy has been through everything.
Yep. This will be Hurricane Gar, yes. But lots of musical murders tonight with some very fun shows. Oh, my.
Yes. I'm back. I had to clear my throat.
And front. Ah.
I had to clear my throat. There's a lot of
That's why I always keep
cool
Drano
air,
beside the computer. That's why I keep Drano beside the computer.
Drano?
Chug that down. Yeah, that clears it. That clears them pipes.
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
And everything else. Everything else.
Uh-oh, that sounds like trouble. Fogsbane built a new percuter, meaning computer, I'm sure.
Ah.
He's up to more electronic deviltry, and I love it.
Yes.
How did you ever change that?
He's the one that can do it.
Yeah. Sent us so many cool things.
Yep.
Uncountable at this point. Sound effects generators, cute little TV movie players. They're so awesome. They're miniature. They're so cute. And Cheers. I love it. Even just some of the photos. I love the Erie House toaster. The Erie House toast. Yeah. That's cool.
Erie House toast, yeah. Yep.
Erie House toast. Yep.
Yep.
Good for you. Have it every morning with your breakfast and Erie House eggs.
Yep. And the side of green ham. Oh, wait. That's Dr. Seuss. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, Fosbane, you make for us,
do.
We appreciate it. Are you kidding me?
Absolutely.
You have our express
consent. Help us all, Fosbane. You want to know if you could use the social media, and absolutely. And the players and all, yes.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know, please. That is almost goes without saying. We probably ought to get started with our first feature, and we might as well start. Should we start
well,
fuging
what?
Around,
we,
or
we could? That's interesting, though. Yes, if we do that, we can go in order of dates, because one's from 1944, one's from 1945, and one's from 1946. So if we go from oldest, we would be starting with, let me see, which was 40? Actually, 45, we'd actually be starting with Inner Sanctum, if you want to go that route.
Start with Inner Sanctum. Why not?
Let's start with that. Yeah, because that one is comes to us from, it's episode number 229, comes to us from January, March, April, May 29th of 1945.
And that's called Musical Score.
I love it already.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is your horror host at the squeaking door of the Inner Sanctum. Come in. Hang your hats on the torture rack over there and get cozy. Tonight, we've got cadenzas and cadavers, murders and melodies. Oh, that's all I can tell you now. No sense putting the cart before the hearse. Is there?
From the way you're talking, I guess we're going to have music on the program tonight. I think that's real nice.
So do I, Mary. I've always loved music. Even as a child, I used to play the death rattle.
Now, please, I'm being serious. You know, I once won a prize for playing the piano. Yes, they gave
me
a...
Wait, don't tell me. Let me guess. They gave you a lovely sterling silver medallion, didn't they, Mary?
No, they didn't. You know very well that the only way you can get that sterling silver medallion is from the Lipton Tea people. And, ladies, it's solid sterling silver, and it's just the right size, about an inch in diameter. It's the kind of jewelry you find at those smart shops on Fifth Avenue in New York. The medallion is decorated with a Chinese inscription, and it's hung on a narrow black rayon satin ribbon. It's just what you want to brighten up your simple silk dresses and your dressy suits. And here's how you get this handsome medallion. Just send 25 cents and the box top from a package of Lipton's, the tea with the brisk flavor, to Lipton Tea, Box 92. That's Box 92, New York City. Send for yours tonight.
Give me a pen, Mary. I'll send them a check immediately. And what's more, I'll write it in blood. There'll be plenty spilled here tonight. The title of our story is Musical Score. It's an original radio play by Christopher Mayo. And our star is Barry Kroger, who plays the role of Grasso. It's the story of a simple melody and of a killer who, as our story opens, is fighting desperately and alone against a raging storm off the coast of Maine. The lifeboat he is in is half foundered, and the man's wild rowing does little good.
I'm a murderer! I killed to be free!
And I am free! Free!
Or am I? Did I do it all for nothing? Peter Tull and his wife. They were the first to go. Almost in the same spot. Tull, world-famous composer. Tull and that tune of his. He had all three of us on the life raft crazy with it. That maddening tune. I can still hear him humming it. Still hear it. But the sea was calm that day. Dead calm.
15 days of calm. 15 days on a raft with a sick woman and three men. And that sun. Tull! Stop that blasted humming!
Sorry, Smythe. Just that Marcia seems to like it. Part of a symphony I'm working on.
It does get on our nerves, Tull. How is your wife?
I don't know, Grasso. Poor Marcia.
Yes. Yes, I know.
I'm hungry. Smythe, how about some ration?
Ah, that fat belly of yours. I told you before, Ivanov, as chief mate, I run this life raft. We've got rations for one person for 2 days. The woman eats, we don't. Now forget it.
Well, we ought to be practical.
Smythe, what made the Santa Margarita go down so quickly?
I told you, nothing but a stray mine. It was Argentine registry, coffee boat, a neutral. It's all it could have been.
Oh, cut it out, will you, Tull? Or change the tune at least? I can't stand it.
Sorry.
We're done for.
Yeah, you may be a famous playwright, Grasso, but you don't know the sea. We're near the main fishing banks. We got a chance of meeting a fisher we can hold out. Tull! Tull, will you stop that blasted tune?
Yes, for heaven's sake, Tull, quit it! What a trio. A perfume manufacturer, a playwright, and a sailor. We all wanted food. We all wanted water. Sweet. An end of Tull's humming. Well, I wanted all that more than the others did. Without Marcia Tull, I could eat a little. Without Peter Tull's song, I could rest. The 17th night it was. The moon painted us all in silver and black. The others slept. Tull had his wife's head cradled in his lap. I crawled over to Tull.
How is she, Tull?
You know, I think she's getting better. She smiled at me a minute ago. My singing helps.
Go on, Tull. Hum. Hum your song. Hum, you little fool, for the last time. Hum.
I cut off his infernal song, cut it off with my fingers, digging into the yielding flesh of his throat. He slumped over his wife's body. I closed my ears to her moans. I pushed them both into the dark water. I was a murderer.
All right. So Tull's gone. So's his wife. But they didn't fall off. One of the three of us murdered them. And it wasn't me.
I don't think you did, Smythe. I know I didn't.
You're voting 2-1 and electing me the murderer, huh?
Not necessarily, Grasso. It just looks a little like it.
How are you going to prove it? Who's going to believe you any more than they'd believe me? Ivanov was ready to murder for a crust of bread. For all I know, Smythe, you did it to sell Ivanov some rations.
Well, we hang together or we hang separately, then.
Let's be practical about this, Smythe. None of us can afford to be mixed up in even the implication of murder. Suppose we have an agreement.
Huh?
Just in case we are picked up.
What kind of an agreement, Grasso?
Suppose we agree now and for all time that Tull and his wife simply died at sea and were buried at sea. 21st day, the rations were gone. And the song, we could all hear Tull humming it from the bottom of the sea. We watched each other like animals. On the 23rd day, a fishing boat picked us up, half dead, cooked alive. But we lived. I lived to fear and to kill again. Fear began with a little scene in the Portsmouth Hospital where we were being treated.
Well, you got your belly full of food even now?
Yes, yes. No more hunger pangs, Smythe. How about you, Grosso?
Pretty normal now, I guess.
Oh, by the way, a friend of mine, second mate on another ship, was in to see me yesterday.
Yes?
Yeah. They picked up a couple of survivors from the Santa Margarita before we were rescued. Not interested, eh? They were a man and his wife.
Well, don't be such a dramatic ass, Smythe. Was it...
No. Not poor Marcia and Peter Tull, but the friends of theirs, the Abraham Davises. You know them?
Davis? The symphony conductor?
Yeah, that's him. Wouldn't he like to know about the Tulls, huh?
You've got a flair for the dramatic, Smythe. Sometimes it's dangerous to be so talented. I began to worry if both of them weren't ganging up on me. But days and weeks passed, and nothing happened. Only the Tull's melody was always with me, day and night. It kept ringing in my head, on and on and on. But at least I hadn't heard from the other two until one morning a letter came from Abraham Davis, the symphony conductor and dear friend of the Peter Tulls.
Dear sir, it has taken me this time to locate you three who were with my lamented friends, Peter and Marcia Tull, when they died at sea. I'm giving a reading from the score of Peter Tull's last symphony in my home prior to its first performance, and thought you might like to hear it.
Hear it? I didn't need a reading to hear it. But I'd have to be there. They would be. Maybe plotting to tell lies about me to Davis. Right then, I decided to kill them both. That way only lay freedom from anxiety. Murder would free me. Ivanov would be first. Yes, fat, beady-eyed Ivanov. I studied their movements. Ivanov worked late at his office every Tuesday night. And on the second Tuesday of each month, the Halifax-bound cargo steamer San Luis left her New York dock. My plan was simple. It involved my waiting for Ivanov in his apartment house on the night of Tuesday, May 8th. My weapon would be simple, too. A common bread knife. Simple and so satisfying.
Good night, Mr. Ivanov. Thanks for the bottle of perfume. My girl's crazy about it.
Not yours. When you get married, I'll give you a quart of it.
Thanks.
I slid the knife from my sleeve and gripped the handle. Ivanov reached his door. His broad back was a leap away. I knew where to strike. You learn those tricks in my trade. An upward thrust just below the right shoulder blade.
You. It was you.
I watched him gasp out his last, feeling no remorse, no pity, just relief that I had nothing more to fear from Ivanov, at least. One more to kill, to be free. One more. I turned my back on the cooling mass at my feet and reached the street. I walked fast. I had only a little while to reach the docks and make my boat. Tull's melody kept beating its tireless notes against my brain.
Well, dear me and glory be,
That's my idea of a real thong plugger. Oh, speaking of music and murder, did you ever hear of the fiddler with a violent temper? He murdered his wife because she was always harping at him. Oh, yes, and because she had a cellist disposition, too.
You're certainly full of musical puns tonight. Good heavens, what have you got there? It looks like a Chinese gong.
It is, Mary. I got it from an auctioneer. You know, those fellows always say, going, going, gong.
Well, what are you going to do with it?
Oh, I've always wanted to kick the gong around. Besides, if you're going to tell that Chinese story about the medallion, I ought to accompany you on the Chinese gong.
Well, I'm not going to tell it in Chinese, so suppose you put that thing away. But, lady, there is a story behind that sterling silver medallion that the Lipton tea people want to send you. And what's more, it's a true story. It seems that the original of this handsome medallion was given to an American flyer who was rescued by Chinese guerrillas after he'd bailed out over enemy territory. The flyer was told that the Chinese letters on the medallion would identify him and bring him safely through the lines. Well, he did get through. And only then did he learn that the inscription said, "Good luck" in Chinese. Now, there's a story to tell your friends when they're admiring your medallion on its smart black rayon satin ribbon. And to get this good luck charm, just like the one the flyer carried, all you have to do is send 25 cents and the box top from a package of Lipton's, the tea with the brisk flavor, to Lipton Tea, Box 92, New York City. How about hitting that gong now so they'll remember? Yes, that's Box 92 in New York City.
All right.
How about banging that goat so they'll remember?
Yes.
There you go.
And Dale, I must apologize to you, my friend.
For
I
what?
Accused you of not having your glasses on, then I hit 45 instead of 44, which was the suspense. So I apologize, my good friend.
Whatever. It's all good, my friend.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I don't even know what day it is. It's Friday.
So that's we got musical is. Songs from the water.
Yeah.
I should get musical songs when I've had a little bit too much to drink, but...
too much bubbly,
I don't. Yeah, I'm telling you. All kinds of music.
Yep. I wonder if music sounds funny underwater. I think I'll take the radio in the bathtub with me today.
No, okay. Well, it could have shocking results there, but yeah.
It'll be soothing.
How well do you like your hair? You know, because it's going to come out a different color.
Yeah, it's coming out anyway. Period. So. It might revitalize, you know. Better than Rogaine. Better than Rogaine.
It'll get you moving anyway.
That's for sure. It'll
be worth a jolt, at least, you know.
Put a jump in my step. To the ceiling!
I don't know. I watched him do that on Columbo. I don't think you'll like the results. That's all I got to say.
Yep. Anywho, let us wrap up. This gem, a well-hosted inner sanctum. Who's our host today? Isn't Raymond Johnson, is it?
No, this would be the other dude. I can't think of his name.
Harvey Keitel. No.
close enough. Close enough.
Rob Schneider. No. Yeah, it's not it either.
Definitely not Rob Schneider. You're closer with Harvey Keitel.
Yes. Are you sure Gar's not here? Ernest Borgnine. Must be. There you go. I knew I'd get it.
Ernest Borgnine trying to sound like Mr. Host. Yes.
Yes.
And doing a darn good job of it.
A fine job. As we wrap up, musical score from Inner Sanctum.
Now let's go back to our murderer who's being haunted by a song. Remember what happened? A composer named Tell and his wife Marcia were thrown off a life raft and drowned by one of three other men on the raft. The killer has been telling us his story as he fights the sea in a lifeboat. You remember that he just murdered Ivanov and is now heading for a Halifax-bound cargo ship.
This is your delightful, Mr. Grosser. Anything I can do for you?
No, thanks. Not just now. I'm going right to bed. When do we reach Halifax?
Tuesday morning, sir.
Yes.
Good night.
Thank you. Oh, wait. I'm afraid I'm rather a nervous traveler. Well, just between us, do we have competent officers aboard?
The best, sir. Captain Jarmes is tops.
Oh.
There's no better chief mate anywhere than Mr. Smythe, sir.
So he was there. I'd gone to a lot of trouble to get aboard that ship, and he was there. I kept out of his way entirely until last night. We were off the main shore. It was raining slightly. I slid the long, well-pointed bread knife into my sleeve and made my way toward the after deck. It lacked 3 minutes of 8 bells.
Skipper, I'm going after a smoke.
There he was, just where he had been every night, smoking, leaning against the rail near the small lifeboat. I could barely see him. It was so dark. But I stole toward him a foot at a time. Now I held my breath. I was so close. Slowly, I brought my arms straight to my side. Flexed my muscles, tense for the thrust. I calculated the lunge. The cigarette told me where his mouth was. Then he turned his head a little, his cigarette flared and lit his face and his eyes were on me.
I thought you'd look me up if I came to the same spot each night. Turning out to be quite a killer, aren't you?
How did you...
Yes!
Can you still hear me smile? Now nobody knows what happened on the life raft. Nobody. I'm free.
Oh, you fool. You'll never be free. The song will...
I dumped Smythe into one of the small boats and climbed in myself. I pushed out on the davits and lowered the boat to within a couple of feet of the water, and then climbed down the supporting ropes to it. I cut the ropes, and the black hull of the ship slid past. We were alone, just Smythe and me, and Smythe was dead. So I threw him overboard, and I was alone and free. And tonight, I'm alone and free. Hear me, Tom! Hear me! No. No. Am I going crazy? There can't be a lie. Not a lie. Well, it must be. It is. Right, it's land. Rocks ahead. The surf breaking against them.
Too close. Too close. I'm going to crash into them. The surf's picking up the boat and throwing me down the rocks. I'll be killed. No!
Wait, darling. I think I hear something outside.
What?
Stop a minute. I think I hear something.
You don't have to shout. What is it there?
Listen. Isn't that our door? Don't you hear pounding?
How could it be? This is a lighthouse, and who would come out to an island in this storm?
Just the same, I'm going to see.
All right, I'll go with you.
Ah!
Good heavens. What did he...
No. No. Not you. Stay away, Tal. Leave me alone! You're dead!
He's fainted, Marsha. Here, give me a hand. Put him in the living room bunk.
Peter?
Yes?
How did he know our name? What did he mean by what he said?
He's changed a lot since we saw him last. since I saw him last. He was on the life raft with us.
The Santa Margarita?
Yes. I'd know him better than you would. You were ill. His name's Grasso. His was the last voice I heard before we fell overboard. Well, Mr. Grasso, you look a lot better this morning. How was your head?
It throbs. I can't move. What happened?
You were washed up against the rocks in a lifeboat. You must have hit your head and banged up your side.
You didn't drown.
Obviously. You didn't choke me thoroughly enough, Grasso. The water revived me. And I was clutching Marsha's dress.
Yes, but how did you...
Get here?
Yes.
Fishing boat. It was almost dawn when you tried to kill us. I managed to hold Marsha up for a little while. We were lucky.
What are you...
Here. Put your arm around my
neck. No.
I'll take you to the tower.
Where's your wife?
Marsha's gone to the mainland to get the doctor.
We're alone.
Yes. We're alone. Relax now.
No. Let me go, Tal. I didn't mean to do it. I was crazy with hunger. And that tune of yours. We're all crazy, Tal. I'll pay you.
No.
I'll pay you.
It's too late, Grasso.
Anything.
Don't struggle. You could start a hemorrhage that way.
What are you going to do to me?
Why, nothing, of course.
Why?
Here we are.
You're not bringing me up here for the sun and the air, Tal.
You're very comfortable in this bed. Marsha liked it here. Wonderful view in every direction. These windows here pull to one side.
What?
Like this, no. See? Now, I'll leave you directly.
No, don't!
Don't what, Grasso?
Why, I don't know. But you're up to something.
Don't be silly. I'm just going to work on my music for a while. I'm having trouble with one part in it. It goes... Remember, Grasso?
That's it. I see it now. Why, you...
You'll be safe here. I have this barred metal door here to keep saboteurs out. If you want anything, just talk. Acoustics are wonderful down these stairs. You can hear everything.
Talk? No, my head. I'll do anything. Only don't...
By the way, Grasso, I heard about Ivanov's murder on the radio the other day.
All right. I did it. I tried to kill you and your wife. I killed Ivanov. I killed Smythe. Get the police, but don't play that song.
In the top drawer of the table next to the bed is a loaded revolver.
Stop, Tom! Stop!
My head.
Stop!
Can't go on. The valve.
God. Yeah. It'll stop it. Now I'll never hear that song again. Never.
Play it! Play your melody, Tom! And the blaze is with you!
I forgot to tell you, Grasso. The gun is loaded with blanks.
There's still a way out. There's still a way out. All right. Tom, you win.
Ah!
Hello? Oh. Hello, Marcia, darling. No, everything is fine now. Yes, yes, there is something you can do for me. Send Davis a wire, will you? Just say, plan fall production of symphony. Have just finished final score.
Say, how would some boogie-woogie sound to you right now, I'd settle for a nice, cozy fife and drum corps.
Now, stop that funny kind of talk, because I've got something important to say. Folks, tonight the Lipton Tea people have asked me to remind you that the goal of this Seventh War loan drive is $14 billion. I guess sums like that are just too big for you and me to understand. But every one of those dollars has a purpose behind it, and that purpose is to end the war in the Pacific as quickly as possible. Yes, that $14 billion is needed to move our soldiers halfway around the globe, to build new ships and faster planes. We've promised our fighting men the very best weapons that can be made. That's the least we can do. And we're helping to fulfill that promise when we buy war bonds, when we support the Seventh War loan drive with every penny we can spare. So, folks, please buy all that you can when the Victory Volunteer comes to your house.
Sure, we got a moral for tonight's story. If you're thinking of marrying a musician, insist on a big house. Don't go in for this lighthouse keeping stuff. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is The Right Red Hand by Joel Rogers. And listen to this. Our star next week will be the famous dramatic actor of stage and screen, Raymond Massey. He will appear in a story about a man who plays chess. Nice, quiet little sport, Except that our friend uses human beings for his chess pieces. And by the time the game is over, those pieces are just too dead to move. Now it's time to close the squeaking door until next Tuesday, when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup bring you Raymond Massey and another Inner Sanctum mystery story directed by Hyman Brown. So, until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
I adore the show.
Folks, there's a modern food with an old-fashioned, homemade flavor. It's Lipton's noodle soup. Yes, Lipton's does taste homemade. It's got that same chickeny taste as the chicken noodle soup you make right in your own kitchen. Lipton's has got the same good herbs and flavoring, the same tender golden egg noodles. But listen, Lipton's noodle soup mix comes in an envelope, and it only takes a few minutes to prepare. Of course, sometimes it's hard to get in some stores these days, but there's lots of good things scarce in wartime. So remember to always ask for Lipton's noodle soup. And remember to tune in next Tuesday night for another Inner Sanctum mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
No truth to the rumor that we use real goat entrails. In our goat chicken soup. No way. It's the actual entrails. But that was a wonderful story. I wonder if
yes, they had a moral with that one, but we can learn something else yet from it.
We can.
We can.
I better get my behind scrolling faster then. House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar. A composition can often end rather quickly with a gunshot. There you go. And that's, especially when Spike Jones does anything.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, alrighty.
Whoa.
No, okay.
I have no idea why that would happen, but we got two more wonderful stories for you.
And going backwards to where we should have started from, we should head to suspense with the one, the only fabulous, Mr. Vincent Price.
Fabulous. And we'll dip back then into 1943.
44, yes.
And we're done fuging around. Fugen C minor?
Boy, it sounds very German when you say Fugen C minor, yeah. Anyway,
if you did you see coming minor?
To us from June the 1st of 1940 and 4.
Once?
Roma Wine presents Suspense.
Goats on Broadway.
Roma Wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Salute. Your health, senor.
Roma Wine toasts the world. The wine for your table is Roma Wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. The Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California welcomes you again to this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you as stars Miss Ida Lupino, currently being seen in Warner Brothers' In Our Time, and Mr. Vincent Price of 20th Century Fox, soon to be seen in the derelict Zanuck production Wilson. For the appearance of these two distinguished screen personalities, Lucille Fletcher has written a suspense play that deals with brooding anxiety and sharpening suspicion, played against the severe and forbidding background of the late Victorian era. And so, with Fugue in C minor, and with the performances of Ida Lupino and Vincent Price, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
This is just to let you know that I arrived in Pilotsville. Lizzie met me at the station. She's heartbroken about Papa's bankruptcy and for some reason feels that it's up to me to remedy the family situation. I told her I'd been offered a job, but she swept away that idea in horror.
A girl with your looks, Amanda Peabody, doesn't have to get a job. There are too many rich husbands floating around for that.
Furthermore, she says she has a rich husband already picked out for me right here in Pilotsville.
Don't you remember? I told you about him at Christmas time. He's a Mr. Evans, rich as Croesus, charming, cultured, a lonely widower with two dear little children. And besides that, he's just your type, a real intellectual. You should hear him play the pipe organ.
And you know, Bessie, I've met so few interesting men lately.
And all you'd have to do is lift your little finger. Mr. Evans.
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Chumley. How delightful to see you here.
I'd like you to meet my sister. Mr. Evans, my sister, Amanda Peabody.
Delighted, I'm sure.
It's a lovely party, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Miss Peabody. Have you just come to Pilotsville?
Yes.
She's down from New York visiting me after the whirl of the hectic social season.
Oh, indeed. Well, I'm afraid our Pilotsville society must seem a bit dull to you, Miss Peabody.
Oh, no, not at all. It's charming. I've enjoyed everything so much tonight. Your beautiful house, the music. I hear you're going to play for us, Mr. Evans.
Oh, a bit. Do you care for organ music, Miss Peabody?
Very much. I never miss a church recital. But what a luxury it must be to have your own pipe organ right here in the house.
I'm afraid I couldn't do without it. It's my hobby, you know. Bach, Buxtehude, César Franck. Don't you adore their work?
Oh, Amanda's very musical. You should hear her render The Burning of Rome.
Yes. And the delightful thing, of course, about having a pipe organ in the house is that it's everywhere. To sit at a keyboard and hear the walls, the ceilings, the floors vibrate. You see, Miss Peabody, I've had the pipes installed all over the house. Under this floor, for example, are all the choir stops. Up in the bedroom walls are the stops for the swell manual. In the great 32-foot pedal stops, the giant diapasons are underneath the staircase. My children sleep next door to the echo chamber. So you see, we live like angels here in a paradise of music.
How thrilling.
Now, ladies, come upstairs to the second floor landing, won't you? And I'll show you the console. It was made for me in Vienna.
And Bessie, dear, to tell you the truth, I really find him fascinating. I wish you could hear him play. It sweeps you off your feet. There is such wildness to it, and at the same time, such dignity. And to hear the sound all through that marvelous house, rolling through those gorgeous rooms with their beautiful tapestries and potted palms. I could sit and listen to him all night.
You have the most amazing eyes, Miss Peabody. What are you thinking about?
The music. Oh, please don't stop. It's so beautiful.
Well, you seem to be as mad about music as I am. Your sister says you play too.
Oh, no, only a little. My appreciation of it is all inside, I'm afraid.
That's plenty. If one can't play, it's better just to enjoy the music of others. I can't bear this sentimental drumming, can you?
I shouldn't think you would enjoy it.
The idiotic tunes people play nowadays. Give me the old stern classics. They have strength and power. Give me something with life to it, something that will flood the whole house with sound.
Oh, that's marvelous.
You're a very unusual girl, Miss Peabody. Quite unlike the run of girls here down here at Pilotsville.
Yes, in what way?
Oh, it's rather hard to explain. Some more tea, Amanda?
No, thank you.
A muffin?
No, thank you. You have an excellent cook, Mr. Evans.
Please, please call me Theodore. You know you promised.
Theodore?
Amanda.
And your house is beautifully run, too. You must have an excellent housekeeper. Everything always looks so charming and quiet. I haven't even heard a peep out of your children.
My children? Oh, yes, the children have been away at school.
You have two, haven't you?
Yes, Daphne and David.
What sweet names.
Ordinarily, I don't approve of schools for young children, but you see, they were rather overwrought. After Mrs. Evans passed on...
Oh, I can well understand.
They were almost morbidly devoted to their mother, and then, of course, the unfortunate circumstances of her death, but... I suppose your sister, Mrs. Chumley, has told you all about that.
No, not very much, except your wife was killed in a street accident, wasn't she?
Yes, in Philadelphia. A brewery wagon and four horses ran her down.
Oh, how terrible.
It's something I don't like to think about very often. Poor, beautiful Margaret. Well, it's like a nightmare, Amanda, and I still can't feel reconciled, but... Well, what I was driving at was the children. They were in school when she died, and by some malicious stroke of fate, there was an epidemic of scarlet fever raging up there. The authorities wouldn't lift the quarantine and let them out for her funeral.
Oh, poor little thing.
Yes, it upset them dreadfully. In fact, I sometimes fear it's left a mark on them which may endure all their lives.
Why, what do you mean?
They suffer from delusions. Delusions about her. They think that in some way she is linked. Her soul is imprisoned in the organ pipes.
How horrible.
I wish I could do something about it. It's a frightful notion, but they won't... They don't let me play when they're at home. That echo chamber in particular next door to their bedroom.
Yes?
You know, it's nothing but an empty sealed room with a few wires. Of course, it's all because they never saw her dead. But they have a notion that she's, well, somehow hidden there.
How ghastly. They really think that, do they? Children can think up such very strange things in their little minds, can't they?
The Tonight, for suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as stars Miss Ida Lupino and Mr. Vincent Price, whom you've heard in the prologue to Fugue in C Minor. Tonight's tale of suspense. Let us look in on another scene for a moment. A smart dinner party at the internationally famous Hotel de Nacional de Cuba in Havana. One of the guests, a world-traveled American, sets down his wine glass and remarks that a truly fine wine always carries the unmistakable flavor of the particular vineyard from which it comes. Well, then, laughs his Cuban host, you must be homesick for California right now. For the wine you are enjoying so much is from America, from California. It is Roma wine. Yes, it's true. Our own wonderful vineyard country in California produces in Roma wines that discriminating people in other lands esteem as an imported delicacy. Yet you here at home can enjoy these distinguished Roma wines for mere pennies a glassful. You pay none of the expensive overseas shipping charges and duties. Daily with your meals or when entertaining or any time, you can delight yourself with the wonderful flavor that comes from age-old winemaking traditions perfected by modern quality controls and tests. Yes, only pennies a glassful for a treat you are certain to enjoy. For remember, Roma wines are America's largest selling wines. Roma, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. And now it is with pleasure that we bring back to our soundstage Ida Lupino as Amanda Peabody and Vincent Price as Theodore Evans in Fugue in C Minor. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I met the children today, Bessie, for the first time. It was a shock. They're strange little creatures, utterly unlike their father. The girl is about 11 and the boy 8. They were both dressed in deep mourning. Their large gray eyes seemed strained with terror. They listened and trembled at every sound.
This is Miss Peabody, children. She's a very good friend of mine. Now I want you both to shake hands with her. Oh, come now, Daphne. You can at least tell Miss Peabody how old you are.
Oh, no. Please don't press her. I know when I was a little girl, I hated people to talk about my age. I'd much rather hear about school.
We're not going back there, no matter what anybody says.
David.
That's all right. Then you didn't like school.
No. And Mommy didn't like it either. She cried when we went away.
Oh. But your Mama wanted you to be educated, didn't she? She wanted you to grow up and be intelligent people, didn't she? Well, didn't she, Daphne?
Who are you?
You may call me Aunt Amanda. I'm a friend of your papa's.
Do you know where my mama is?
Your mama? Well, your mama's in heaven, dear.
No, she's not.
Then where is she, dear?
Please don't start them off, Amanda. It's too upsetting. Come along, children. Now we're going to have a little music, like old times. You remember when your mother was alive, we all used to play together. David, you with your cornet, and Daphne at the violin, and Mama at the piano. Well, Miss Peabody plays the piano, too. She's promised to play Narcissus, Mama's favorite piece. Well?
Well, perhaps some other time, Theodore, when they don't feel so strange.
I tell you, I've humored them to death. Now, come, David. There's your cornet on the mantelpiece. And Daphne?
No.
I insist. Look, now, I'll start the melody on the organ. David, you come in with your cornet obbligato in the third measure. Daphne, you can follow me.
What's that?
Come along, children.
What's that note? That note making that funny noise.
What note? Oh, you mean that? Oh, that's just a cipher. A wire must have stuck somewhere. One of the pipe valves.
It's Mama. That's where Mama is. She's calling for us.
Oh, don't be silly.
I just hit the key a few times and it'll stop. You've heard these ciphers before, haven't you, Miss Peabody?
Well, I don't know much about pipe organs.
It's a common technical occurrence, but very annoying, of course.
What is she doing in there? Why doesn't it stop? That's where she is. She's in the pipe and she can't get out.
Daphne, stop that nonsense.
Oh, hush, dear. Your papa will fix it.
No, he won't. He can't. He won't let him because he killed her.
Daphne, what did you say?
She didn't mean it, I'm sure. The poor little thing's hysterical. We should never have tried to persuade them.
Oh, man. Just because they never looked upon her face, because they never saw her lying there in the coffin.
Hush.
My own children believe that I am a murderer.
Theodore, you're making them both sick.
And so I who loved their mother so much, who was so devoted for 12 years, do I look like a murderer, Amanda? Do I?
No.
There it is again. It's Mama. It's Mama.
Shh, dear. I'll take them upstairs for you, Theodore, while you try and fix it.
Mama's ringing the doorbell.
Man, Mama don't sound doing too good a voice.
Mama has a voice like Sam Elliott.
I'll believe that when she says, only you can prevent forest fires.
Fires, yes. There you go.
Sam Elliott is the voice of Smokey Bear.
No, he wasn't. Really?
Yes. Yes. He takes
great
pride in that.
The original Smokey Bear.
Well, I don't know. He's been doing it for a long time. Maybe not the original, but he has been doing it for many years now for their public service announcements and such.
That's awesome. He's got the pipes
for
him. He has
he
got
does.
The pipes for it.
Only you.
I only say that about like maybe a dozen people have a great set of pipes. He is definitely one of them.
Oh, he does. And it's cross-generation. My son is a big, big fan of his. My youngest. Yeah.
Thurl Ravenscroft. He had a great
Yeah. Yes,
Paul Frees. Paul Frees.
Paul Frees.
I guess you got to give it to Mel Blanc.
Well, he had a variety of voices, didn't he? Yeah, he didn't have that.
Well, some of them were quite. I believe that if he wanted to, he could sing, because he had that range to do anything.
Oh, he did. He sang with Spike Jones. He
yep.
did clink clink another drink.
Yes, yes. Which I think we played on one of our musical nights.
We did. I'm sure we did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. 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 Uh oh.
Uh-oh, the cat's attacking?
That's my wife. She's weird. Sent me a message. with a collie, no less. It's too funny. She should be listening to Musical Murderers.
She should be listening to Musical Murderers.
Like we are. Yeah, this is pretty good, this feud. I think one of the classic Halloween pieces is Fugue in D minor. This is Fugue in C minor.
Ah.
I think Fugue in D minor is that organ you hear that you associate with the silent phantom of the opera.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, 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 yes.
There you go. You know what I'm talking about. See?
Yes, I do.
I am not educated on music, but I have an ear for it. And let's put our ears on the final.
Let's put our ears. Put your ears together, everyone.
Yes, put your two ears together. If you can do that, send us a picture. Fugue in C minor from Suspense. Vincent Price and Ed Albino.
Oh, Bessie. Those poor little children. We took them out to the cemetery today to show them her grave. A marble angel guarded it. It was planted with pure white tulips. How final it was and peaceful. And yet they began to tremble again the moment we set foot inside the house. Poor Theodore. The man is nearly out of his mind. What can he do? I keep asking myself that question.
She died in Philadelphia, you say?
Yes, on May 15th, just a little less than a year ago.
You weren't with her?
No, she went there to take a piano lesson. There was a new teacher she'd heard about. She was always so self-conscious about her technique. But she never reached his studio. They notified me at midnight from the city morgue.
And no one in Philadelphia saw her?
No one except the attendants at the morgue, of course, and the people who picked her up after the collision. It was such a brutal accident.
There'd be no one from among them who could speak to the children, explain to them?
Oh, no. Oh, it's so horrible, so sordid.
Oh, I know, my dear. I hate to make you suffer. But if we could find some way, if they could just believe. When you brought her back here to Pilotsville, there was a funeral.
Yes.
And was there anybody then who saw her?
Oh, no, I couldn't bear it, Manda. I didn't think at the time. She'd been so beautiful, her lovely, sweet, gentle face and her eyes. The horses had completely trembled.
Oh.
Even if the children had been able to come home, I wouldn't have let them look. The coffin was sealed when I left Philadelphia. I didn't want to see her again myself.
But there was a funeral. People came. There were flowers and undertaker.
Yes.
Well, if they could believe that, if there was one with me, perhaps my own sister Lily.
Of course there was a funeral, the finest funeral in town. A snow-white hearse and 25 coaches. Everybody sent flowers. The casket wasn't open, but I've been to lots of funerals where they don't open the casket. And from what I understand, she was pretty badly mangled. But it was a beautiful funeral. Mr. Evans played the organ himself, the finest selections, all the sweet old pieces his wife liked. There was Narcissus and Mighty Little Rose and Goodbye.
So you see, David, my sister, Mrs. Chumley, was there.
Yes, but how did she know it was Mama?
Oh, David.
She didn't see Mama, did she?
Well, nobody saw your poor Mama, dear. She wouldn't have wanted anyone to see her.
Mama wasn't there. She talks to us every night. She tells us to look for her.
Where, dear?
In the pipe.
But, David, your Mama's dead. She's been dead for nearly a year. Oh, you saw her grave out in the cemetery. She's happy and at rest.
Why doesn't Papa give us the key? If he'd only let us have it, we could look for her.
What key, dear?
The keys to the pipe. There's a little door just underneath the stairs. That's where the big pipes are. And inside it's all dark. But where are the... But there are tunnels. There's a little room.
A little room.
That's where she's hiding. That's where Mommy is.
Oh, David, darling, now look, come here.
No, I hate you.
But why do you hate me? Why don't you let me help you?
Because...
Because what?
Because you like him.
Him?
Papa. You're going to marry him, aren't you?
Why?
Yes, you are. Safina says you are. You're going to marry him. Then you'll send us back to school. There'll be no one left to help Mama. Poor Mama will never be left out. Oh, I hate you. I hate you.
David, what are you doing here? David, did you strike Miss Peabody?
He's sick, Theodore. I'm sure he's very sick.
Now go to your room at once. Oh, those dreadful children. I tell you, Amanda, they'll ruin whatever happiness we might have.
Theodore, I love you very much, but I couldn't marry you. Not with that child's cry ringing in my head. We've got to help them. Give them that key. Let them go and look in the room where the pipes are. Then they'll see for themselves that there's no ghost.
Key? Who told you about a key to that room?
The children.
The children? Amanda, I'm going to tell you something. Something I've never told to a living soul. It may frighten you.
Yes.
Margaret was going mad when she died.
Oh.
No one knew it but me. It ran in her family. I discovered it long after we were married, after the children were born. Otherwise, I'd never have...
And now you think the children?
I'm afraid so. It was peepling of sound she had, just like them, a fear of the dead's returning. She used to play... What's that?
Sounds like the organ.
But the motor isn't on. The console was locked when I left.
Someone's trying to play.
No one but me can touch that instrument. It's forbidden in this house, and the servants are out. Unless those children... Come upstairs, Amanda.
Theodore, why, there's no one here. No one at the keyboard. The organ's playing itself.
That's impossible. The motor's not going.
The motor?
Yes, except the bellows going. There's no air in the pipes unless it's on. No air to make the pipes speak. It's impossible, I tell you.
The children found the key and got in.
Key? No. The key's here in my pocket.
There's no other way in.
No.
Theodore, open that door. Go in there and see what's happening, please.
No.
Theodore.
I won't give in. I won't be a prey to it, do you hear? I won't. There. It stopped now.
Yes.
It was probably nothing but the wind.
Theodore, give me the key. I'm not afraid.
Are you saying that I am?
I don't know. But I'll be fair with you, Theodore. I couldn't marry you and live here with that any more than your children can.
What do you mean?
Rip out those pipes. Rip out the whole pipe organ. Give it to a church, but don't keep it here.
Get rid of the pipe organ?
Yes.
But I couldn't. The whole house was built around it. It's been the very soul and spirit of this home.
It's been the curse, you mean. Theodore, I know I'd go mad, too, if I had to listen to it night and day. It's so hollow. Think of those pipes, so huge down there in the darkness. I'd begin to hear things, too. Oh,
Theodore! Quiet. Come outside. We'll take a walk.
No, give me the key. Give me the key.
You're hysterical, Amanda. I'm sorry I've overburdened you.
Why don't you want to go in there? Is it because you know something? You did something.
What do you mean?
Did you kill her?
Amanda. Very well, Amanda. Here's the key. If that's the way you trust me, we'll go down and look around together. Come now, Amanda.
I'm sorry, Theodore. It slipped out. It was a dreadful thing to say.
All right, I understand. Yet it hurts a little. I've trusted you so completely, Amanda.
Theodore.
Yes, Amanda.
Let's not go in there. I do trust you, darling. I believe everything you've told me.
No. This little key. To think it should mean so much.
Black it is.
Yes, pitch black.
And cold. Where are the pipes? I can't see them.
Come in further, Amanda. You'll see them as soon as your eyes grow accustomed to the darkness. The biggest pipes pack this well under the great staircase like giants.
Oh, yes. I'm beginning to see them now. Shouldn't we go and get a candle?
Oh, no. Go in a little further. Be careful. The floor's a maze of wires. Now stand there for a second.
Theodore! Don't leave me.
I won't be long. I thought you said you weren't afraid.
No, I'm not only... Where are you going?
Just upstairs to play for you.
Theodore.
I'd like you to hear how the music sounds in the darkness. It's quite an experience being so close to the pipes. You know, narrow, suffocating, especially when I play the great Passacaglia and Fugue of Bach.
Oh, Theodore, please. I don't want to stay here.
Perhaps one of the Rheinberger symphonies or the great chorales of César Franck. Margaret, of course, preferred Narcissus.
Margaret?
You're very gullible, Amanda.
Then you did kill her. You killed her in this room. And you're going to kill me.
Yes, simple, isn't it?
But why?
I don't know. One gets tired every now and then of mere music. Sometimes the classics demand competition. A scream, for example. There's something so exciting about pulling out all the stops and drowning out all human sound. Have you ever tried to match your voice, Miss Peabody, against the thunderous voice of Bach? It's most effective. And then when the struggle gets weaker, when the air is almost gone and you choke and gasp for breath, to bring the music down softer, softer.
Theodore, you're mad, you're mad.
Come, Amanda. Would you deny me that pleasure?
No.
I'll promise you the concert won't be too long. It takes about 8 hours before the air gives out. But you know, I could play for days. And don't worry about the children. I think you've convinced them about the ghost. A
What's that?
Theodore?
Someone shut the door. It's locked and the key's outside. Who's there? Let me out. Let me out.
Theodore.
Get away from me. Let me out, Junior. Let me out. Let me out. I can't breathe. I'm suffocating. It's so dark. I can't breathe. Let me out, please. Please. I can't breathe. I can't. No. No, don't. I can't. I can't. Let me out. I can't breathe.
May 1st, 1900. I shall be coming home in a few days, Betty. I still can't sleep at night. I still hear that laughter. Still hear that cornet playing its unearthly music. And Theodore Evans once more lies dead at my feet. It was his heart, Betty. He died of fright. In those few moments, he anticipated the hideous fate he had meted out to so many. And I might have died there if he had not gone so quickly. But the children hated me. They wanted to kill us both. Those terrible, pathetic children. What horrors they must have sensed in that charnel house. There were other women beside his wife. He found them all buried and stuffed away into unused parts of the pipe organ. Yes, see, I was in that pipe room alone with him for 4 hours before that door creaked open. There they stood, and I shall never forget their faces or the things they said.
Quiet, Miss Peabody. You can come out now if you're really sorry.
I'm sorry.
Are you sure he's quite dead?
Yes, he's dead.
We were right all the time, weren't we, Miss Peabody?
Yes, you were right.
Now, will you come and help us find Mama?
So closes Fugue in C Minor, starring Miss Ida Lupino and Vincent Price. Tonight's tale of suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. Of all the rich treasures man gets from the earth and Mother Nature, none has been more highly esteemed than wine, good, delicious wine. And if you are one who does not yet know how much and how delightfully Roma wines add to your meals, well, let me urge you not to miss out any longer on such a treat as this. There's nothing complicated about it. Just get and serve Roma wine with any meal or any time in any kind of glass you wish. Serve it chilled. Try the many different kinds of Roma wine until you find those you like best of all. Try Roma California Sherry with its wonderful nut-like flavor as an appetizer, or Ruby Red Roma Burgundy, or the deliciously delicate-flavored Roma Sauterne. These superb wines cost you only pennies a glassful, yet they make even the simplest meal taste like $1 million. Get some today, and if your dealer is temporarily out of Roma, please try again soon. You owe it to yourself to have and regularly enjoy R-O-M-A, Roma wine, America's largest selling wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Ida Lupino. Mr. Spear has just been telling me a little about next week's suspense show. The star will be Thomas Mitchell, in a story about a man who had headaches, tried everything to cure them, finally went to a psychiatrist, and found out that he was a murderer. Well, that certainly sounds like a broadcast we listeners won't want to miss. One more word. Don't forget to buy that war bond this week.
Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Thomas Mitchell and Donald Crisp in... Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Oh, sorry. Lost something cool there.
And you know what? There is something we certainly could learn from this besides don't be around, hang around nasty kids.
Yep. And after having getting snuck up upon one time, you think I'd be ready this time? But no! House Radio proudly presents another Garless Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. Be careful of classical music. Too much of it can possibly kill you.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
Yeah. It was disgusting.
Okay. Hey, you left one voice off of your great, great voices. You left off the great Orson Welles.
We didn't get to Orson Welles. We didn't get to Ernie Anderson. And
oh, yes.
Another great Ohioan in the same regard is Fritz. There's another.
Oh, yeah.
There's another smooth-talking devil right there. Yeah.
Now, he settled in Cincinnati. Was he originally from Cincy? I mean, Columbus. Was he originally from Columbus?
Don't know.
But, boy, he lived, and that's where he is now. So he spent most of his life there. Once he got out of the Army, he ended up in Columbus somehow.
Yes. It was some prison exchange thing. Something. No, I'm kidding. Not Fritz. Fritz was so cool.
We
had the good fortune to be on a discussion panel with him. We talked about that a long time ago. But it was a thrill. It was a thrill listening to him. It was the second time I got to spend a good deal of time with him. He's an amazing guy. We got more radio, don't we?
We do have just a wee bit more radio here.
Just a wee bit more, which means we could have some extra features maybe today.
We do have the shadow. And this is your least favorite guy, Brett Morrison, I believe. It's episode number 357, and it comes to us from February 3rd. 1946.
The goat knows.
Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, Murder with Music.
Staring at me. Why don't you say something? No!
wouldn't hit me. You wouldn't hit me. Oh, my feet. Why? Why are you... Stop. Stop, for the love of heaven. Don't hit me. Oh, no. Please. No. Get away from me.
Well, doesn't he, Lamont?
I suppose so, Margot. It's getting late. Isn't he ever going to stop?
Oh, darling. Mrs. Hamilton has planned this recital for weeks. Edward Miranda is a protege. Now, we must be polite.
Why? Just because she's in the social register and has a mansion uptown?
Mrs. Hamilton is a patron of the arts. It's Edward Miranda's the latest discovery. She's put him up here at her home. She's given him the finest teachers. She's completely responsible for his success.
Now, if you ask me, the old gal's probably just got a crush on that young pianist.
Now, you behave yourself. It's his music, darling. Sponsored artist.
Well, that's over. Oh, it's past 11. Let's say thanks and good night and get out of here before the darlings and you played so divinely start.
Darlings!
Too late.
Miss Lane, how charming to see you again.
Hello. Hello, how are you? Lamont, you know Oliver Viceroy, the society columnist.
Of course, of course, everybody knows me, Miss Lane. Harriet's got a real find in Edward Milan, don't you think? Going to make him a big star.
He's quite young, isn't he?
The aesthetic type, you know. Hope Harriet doesn't push him too hard. But you know Harriet Hamilton once she sets her mind to a thing.
Well, she certainly got some of the most influential people up here to hear his first recital.
Oh, Harriet can do anything.
Oh, by the way, have you seen Jennifer Gay around?
No, I haven't seen Jen.
Well, she's a friend of yours and Mrs. Hamilton, isn't she?
The truth is, Mr. Viceroy, I made Miss Lane promise to introduce me to Miss Jennifer Gay. I was anxious to meet the famous actress.
No, I don't think you're likely to see her here tonight. Well, Tata, I must make the rounds.
Oh, that old fluff. The day I see him without that silly blue cornflower boutonniere, I give him a big red apple.
Now, right? Lamont, stop it. That's a trademark. You know, best man in town.
Let's get out of here, Margaret.
Oh, you played so divinely.
Spoiled again.
Didn't he play divinely, Miss Lane, Mr. Cranston?
Yes,
this is my protege, Edward Miller.
How do you do,
Mr. Millan? We did enjoy your playing very much.
Thank you, Aunt. Really, Harriet, I'd like to be excused, if I may.
Oh, just a few more introductions, Edward. Recitals upset Edward dreadfully. It's the first time he's played before so many well-known people.
Oh, by the way, Mrs. Hamilton, is Jennifer Gay around? I'd like to meet her. I've enjoyed her plays so much.
Jennifer Gay? No, she's not around, Mr. Cranston. As a matter of fact, she wasn't invited. She won't be here tonight. Oh, what's that?
Sounds like someone rapping on the French door.
There is someone standing outside me.
It's a girl.
And there's something wrong with her. Look.
Harriet, look. She's falling against the glass. What is it? Stand aside, everybody.
Jennifer,
keep away from Mr. Viceroy.
No, let me help her. Jennifer, my darling.
Harriet, it is Jennifer.
Oh, don't look, Edward. Come on, we've got to do something to help her.
It's too late, Margot. She's dead.
Oh, what?
She's been brutally beaten. I'm afraid this is murder. Everybody, just stay right here in the living room. The police will be here in a minute.
Oh, but this can't be murder, Mr. Cranston, here in my home.
I'm afraid it is, Mrs. Hamilton. People don't commit suicide that way.
Jennifer murdered this way.
Now, please try to control yourself, Mr. Viceroy.
Who could have killed him, murdered him so brutally this way?
Oh, it couldn't have been any of my guests, Mr. Cranston. We were all in this room when Jennifer was killed. You and Miss Lane had chairs right by the door. You'd have seen if anyone had...
Yes, that's true.
Hello, everybody. Sorry I'm late.
Lamont, that's Brad Bartholomew.
Oh, my God. So I see. Body beautiful himself.
Well, what's wrong, Harriet? I thought this was a party. You all look as though you'd seen a ghost.
Not a ghost, Mr. Bartholomew. A body.
Huh?
Jennifer Gay's dead body is under that robe.
Well, not Jennifer.
You
know her, Mr. Bartholomew?
Well, certainly I know her. She's one of my best friends. I wouldn't exactly say friends, Mr. Bartholomew.
Oh, you here too, Papa Viceroy?
Where were you all evening, Mr. Bartholomew, if you were invited here?
I was having a few drinks at the Penguin Club after dinner. I didn't realize it was so late.
Oh, I see.
Oh, Mr. Cranston, can't my guests leave now? We were all in this room at the time.
Yes, please, Mr. Cranston. I'm afraid that will have to be for the police to say. They should be here any minute now. Mr. Bartholomew, would you step over here a minute?
Well, yes, of course.
It's been a terrible thing, hasn't it?
Yes, it certainly has.
Particularly since you were such a good friend of Jennifer Gay.
Well, actually, I just met Jen since I came east. We were really only acquaintances.
I see. Now, I've admired those strong, silent roles you play in the movies, Mr. Bartholomew. They really give you some rugged parts to play.
Well, thanks, Cranston. Yes, I really have to keep in trim for pictures.
Of course. You say you were at the Penguin Club all evening?
Yes, I was. Say, are you trying to pump me, Cranston? I've heard you're mixed up in some kind of amateur criminology.
Not at all.
Well, don't then. When the police get here, they can check my alibi. I was at the Penguin Club all evening. Mr. Jenkins, the owner, will verify that. He's a close friend of mine.
I imagine he is. Well, thanks, Mr. Bartholomew. It was nice having the opportunity to get to know you better.
You know, Lamont, I'm amazed the police let everybody go.
Well, they really have nothing to hold them on yet, Margot. Of course, they're all well-known names.
Yeah, true. How did you make out with the Greek god, Brad Bartholomew? You two seem to be having quite a chat.
So far, Bartholomew seems to be the only suspect with the strength to commit that brutal murder and also the motive.
Motive?
Jealousy, darling. According to the society columns, he and Jennifer were having a pretty hectic romance.
Yes, but how could Brad have done it? He was supposed to be at the Penguin Club all evening.
Yes, I know. When Brad left this evening, I happened to notice him pick up a pair of men's gloves from the hall table.
Well, darling, they were probably his own.
I'm sure they were. I also noticed that those same gloves were on the hall table when we first came in.
Oh, you think he was there before the recital, attacked Jennifer in the garden, say, and then made a grand entrance to establish his alibi.
Alibi that might have been framed. Well, I know, darling, the police checked with the Penguin Club before we left. But by Bartholomew's own admission, he is a close friend of Mr. Jenkins, the owner of the club. I think the Shadow had better pay a little call on Mr. Jenkins and double-check that airtight alibi.
Okay, boys, close up and you can all go. I'm going over the books for a while.
There's something else we must go over first, Mr. Jenkins.
Who's that? There's nobody in this office.
The Shadow is here to pay you a call, Mr. Jenkins.
The Shadow? Who are you? What do you want?
The truth. A man's life is at stake.
A man's life?
Brad Bartholomew. Why did you say he was here in your club with you all evening? Why did you instruct your help to tell the same lie if anyone questioned?
Oh, Brad's a friend of mine. He asked me to say that. I didn't want to see him get in any trouble with that Jennifer Gay.
Jennifer Gay? What trouble, Mr. Jenkins?
Well, he's been trying to ditch her. He's got another girl. He was with that girl when he left here right after dinner tonight.
If Bartholomew wasn't here at your club, where was he? Where did he go?
I don't know, I swear. I wouldn't have lied about him being here if I'd thought I was going to get in any trouble.
You're in plenty of trouble, Jenkins. If Brad Bartholomew is the murderer, you've made yourself an accomplice. And you'll pay for that stupid lie.
Really, Lamont, you're going to get into trouble sometime. Barging into Mr. Bartholomew's hotel suite at 3 in the morning. His valet told you he wasn't in.
Well, I wanted to make sure. Can't believe anybody when you're on the trail of a killer, Margot. Mm. I believe Jenkins. I've never found out what I know now.
Do you really think Bartholomew's the killer?
Well, it looks now as if Brad Bartholomew deliberately faked an alibi so he could kill Jennifer.
Now, it is odd, isn't it? Bartholomew's valet said he hadn't seen him since he went down to the hotel storage room to open up one of his trunks.
Funny time of night for that sort of thing. Unless he was getting some clothes out for a quick getaway. Margot, we're going to slip down into the basement, into that storage room.
Oh, darling, if he is down there and he is the killer, Our lives won't be worth 2 cents.
Have to take that chance, darling. Come on. Take my hand, Margaret. These stairs are going to lead.
There may be a trap on. He knows you're on his trail. He may just want us to come down.
Watch it. There, that's the last step.
There's nobody down here at this hour. Golly. And the place is pitch dark, too.
Gone, I can't find the light.
Yes. Take my light.
Oh, thanks. What helps from?
Look at all those dusty old trunks. I wonder, maybe hiding behind those.
Yes, and he may have skipped out,
too. Come on, let's go back upstairs. You know how strong the killer must be. He could be just like the beast Jennifer. He could snap our necks the way he killed her and... His name on it.
Trunk's right up against his closet door. Yeah, I'll pull it away. We'll see if it's locked.
Wait, I have
it. Margo, look out. That closet door's opening. There's something in there.
What?
Back, Margo, quick. It's coming out.
It's alive. Someone has drawn me.
Of you, that means the common cold with all its usual miseries. Now, for 51 years, millions of cold sufferers have known just what to do. They've turned to Grove Cold Tablets for comforting relief fast. Maybe you didn't know that Grove Cold Tablets get right down inside and work internally to give relief from all these usual miseries of a cold at once. Relief number one, help reduce fever. Relief number two, ease your headache. Relief number three, alleviate body ache. Relief number four, reduce nasal stuffiness. Relief number five, lessen muscular pain. Grove Cold Tablets can do all this because they're a multiple medicine, compounded like a doctor's prescription. Yes, a combination of 8 active medical ingredients specifically for your cold relief. Now remember to rest and avoid exposure. Get Grove Cold Tablets and take exactly as directed. Look for the name Grove, G-R-O-V-E, Grove Cold Tablets, for relief of cold miseries.
And fill your bathtub with Vicks Vapor Rub and jump right in.
I got a question for you, Dale.
Yes, sir.
Can we ever go into the commercial of The Shadow without Margot Lane screaming? Every time they go into commercial break, she's screaming. What? She's screaming. Yeah. Screaming.
The trademark, I don't know.
Yep.
It leaves you in a feeling of danger until after the break.
Oh, okay. It's kind of a latcher thing to make you hang on.
Yeah, it's like a
hook.
It's a hook. There you go. It's a hook.
I have a musical fact for you, Dale.
A musical fact?
Yes. In early 1990s, during the heyday of The Simpsons' popularity, the people behind the show decided it was time for the cartoon family to start churning out pop hits. And Do the Bartman was one of those songs. There were rumors that the track was ghostwritten by Michael Jackson, who was a huge Simpsons fan. But the show's producers denied it. It wasn't until many years later the show's creator, Matt Groening, finally confessed that Jackson did indeed co-write the song, but had to do it in secret because he was contractually forbidden from writing for an outside label.
Ooh.
There you go. So Michael Jackson had yet another hit on his hands with
And another Linda dirty Bartman. Secret. Another dirty secret about Michael Jackson.
Hey, I like the Bartman. I like the Bartman.
Working outside of his contract.
Yeah,
why?
Well, yeah, that was yeah. Why? That's,
no, he didn't make anything off that. Of it. Nobody knew about it.
Yeah, but and here's something that may be of interest for you, a job for you as you are heading into retirement at some point here in the future.
Uh-oh.
Axl Rose smoke cigarettes as a part-time gig.
Oh, God.
While Guns N' Roses were struggling to make an impact on the Hollywood music scene in the mid-1980s, Axl Rose held down some interesting jobs, including a position of night manager at Tower Records location on Sunset Boulevard. He and his bandmate Izzy Stradlin also participated in a scientific study at UCLA where they smoked cigarettes for reportedly wages of $8 an hour, equivalent to $19 an hour today. So
you
smoke
much.
Cigarettes? For, what?
$8 an hour? I can eat that much. No, I'm kidding.
So there you go, Dale. A part-time job for you when all is said and done.
Yeah, that would be good. I don't have another pack.
Got a light. Got a light, anyone?
Yeah.
Wait till I turn off my oxygen tank.
Now, there's a trooper. I have known people that were on oxygen tanks and we're still smoking. Oh, God.
Yep.
There's a fighter.
Yeah.
There's a fighter yep. for you. Yeah, maybe it's time for me to slow down here.
Oh, my.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Well, we might as well wrap up.
I was going to say, we still have a bit of story to finish. And, oops, my cat is not helping me up on my desktop here. Thank you so much, Tig.
Yep. Here's the conclusion of the Shadow Murder Music.
Now, back to the Shadow.
Yep.
Lamont Cranston and Margot Lane, on the trail of a brutal killer, stumbled on something hidden in the closet of a hotel basement storage room.
What was it, Lamont? What was it that grabbed me?
Corpse, Margot.
Oh.
Tell again soon you pushed that trunk away from the closet door.
Didn't dead body?
Brad Bartholomew's body, Margot.
What?
The neck broken, the head nearly yanked off.
Oh, Lamont, I...
Brad Bartholomew killed the same way Jennifer Gay was killed this afternoon by someone with the strength of a giant.
Oh, it's horrible, Lamont. I want to get out of here.
Wait. On his coat, Margot. Few tiny petals of blue cornflower.
Oliver Viceroy.
He must have seen Bartholomew tonight.
But how could Viceroy have killed Bartholomew this way? Viceroy is not a young man and certainly not the strong virile type.
Maybe Viceroy didn't kill him. He could have hired some thug, brought him along to do his killing for him.
Why?
Revenge for Jennifer's death. Viceroy's always been in love with her.
You mean you think Bartholomew killed Jennifer this evening, and then Viceroy had him killed for revenge.
What more perfect revenge could he have than to see Bartholomew die in the same brutal way he'd used to kill Jennifer? Let's go, Margot.
You're going to Oliver Viceroy?
Alone. Right now. As the Shadow. Beside me on my desk here in my room as I write this, my last column. The famous society matron will shed no tears over my suicide. Even now she sheds no tears over the murder of the beautiful actress. I name no one as guilty. But I know that a woman's jealousy and hate did kill Jennifer Gay. That is my obituary. Now the gun. What? Who's that?
The Shadow has your gun now, Oliver Viceroy.
The Shadow? Where are you? What's happened here?
Why did you kill Brad Bartholomew?
Brad Bartholomew? He's been murdered too?
Yes, Oliver Viceroy, beaten, his neck broken like Jennifer Gay. You hired someone to kill him.
No, I didn't. I swear I didn't.
And why were petals from your boutonniere found on the lapel of his coat?
Petals? My blue flower. It's a trick. Someone deliberately planted them there.
You wanted Brad killed for revenge. You believed he killed Jennifer.
No. I know that he didn't. Brad didn't kill Jennifer, but I know who did.
Yes?
Harriet Hamilton. She hated Jennifer because Jennifer was trying to steal Edward Milland, her protege, from her.
You have proof?
I have this letter. Listen. Dear Oliver, you are the only person I know who has influence over Jennifer Gates. She's trying to take Edward from me. Keep her away. I'll kill her if she dares interfere. Find Harriet Hamilton.
Why have you hidden this evidence? Why didn't you go to the police with it?
Harriet helped me, too, to get started. But I feel no gratitude now for that woman. She planted my flower so the police would suspect me of Brad's murder.
You're naming her to save your own life.
Why would I lie when I was about to kill myself? You saw Shadow. You saved me from suicide. Well, there's a reason for living now. To see her hanged.
I'll take that letter, Viceroy. The Shadow has all the information he needs now. You can rest assured that the real murderer will be brought to justice.
Might try to get away.
She must know that Bartholomew's disappearance can't go undiscovered very long.
But if she did kill Jennifer, why would she also kill Bartholomew?
Because she had to. If Brad was at her house before the recital, he probably witnessed the murder.
I can't see how a woman like Harriet Hamilton could be a vicious, cruel killer.
Well, we'll know that when we get there, Margot, if we're not too late.
This hour, they might think it's very odd.
I'm too nervous to sleep, Harriet. I've got to be
nervous. You've got nothing to be nervous about, Edward.
Nothing. After what happened here in this house this evening, baby.
Stop playing, Edward.
Playing is the only thing that helps me now.
You heard me, Edward. Stop playing.
You're
not frightened of me, are you, Edward? Why, I'm the one who gives you strength. I'll make you great.
I know, Harriet.
I've always taken care of you. I'm very fond of you, Edward.
I couldn't get along without you here. You've given me everything. But this tonight, this awful thing, Jennifer and Brad. What if the police find out?
Edward.
They're dead, aren't they?
Edward.
They're dead. They're
acting like an hysterical child. Sounded like someone coming up the drive.
There's a car just drove up.
One of the neighbors?
At 4:30 in the morning. No, Harriet. It's the police.
Oh, no, they couldn't have found out.
Tell them the truth, Harriet. Tell them everything.
Listen to me, Edward. I've made plans for this. They're running away.
No, they've captured.
I've the news for you already packed in one for me, too. I've hidden them in the second floor room in the garage above the car.
Harriet, I'm afraid.
Together we'll manage. Come with me now.
I can't, Harriet. I'm afraid.
You can. You must, Edward.
Let me go.
No. Out the 30 seconds to the garage. Quick. You're coming with me. You say you might be on the second floor of the garage. You're safe here for a moment while they search the house.
I can't, Harriet. Tell the police the truth. I'll tell them the truth.
All right. You fool, tell them. You'll hang. I won't.
I'll hang.
Of course you will. But it was worth it, wasn't it? I've always wanted Jennifer out of the way. I'm glad she's dead. Brad, too, had to be killed. I didn't even know he was in the house until I saw him looking out, watching you kill Jennifer.
You wanted them killed. I'll hang.
Jennifer was after you for her strength. She would have taken you from me.
You made me kill them for you. You told me lies. Jennifer was laughing at us. She made me hate her until I killed her in a blind rage.
Yes, but no one would suspect you, Edward. You're so weak and so dependent. No one would dream of the great strength that lies in those two hands of yours.
Yeah, my two strong hands I exercised and developed to make beautiful music. You urged me on so they'd bring pain and death. You made me kill for your own selfish purpose.
Listen. They're down below now. You've got to get out of here somehow. The window.
You're not going anywhere, Harry.
Edward, why are you locking that door?
We're trapped, Harriet. You know it. You don't care because you're not the murderer.
They won't take you, Edward. You could beat them. Snap their necks if you chose.
No, Harriet. It's your neck I'm after this time.
No, no.
Yes, look at these powerful hands, Harriet. The hands that beat Jennifer and Brad to a pulp.
Edward, you wouldn't let me.
I'm going to show you how I killed Jennifer.
Oh, no.
First one blow on her face like this. She got up herself just like that. I smashed down with another and another.
Stop.
Stop. Now, Harriet.
No.
This is how Jennifer felt when I grabbed her throat and choked.
Someone, you got no gun in the terrace in there, please.
Try to save that woman. Gotta break through this door.
Come on, keep away from underneath the terrace.
Please,
Lamont,
stay away
from
me. All right, Milan. For you.
You're coming with me.
No, you
don't.
I've got him. Phone the police, Margot. He's not going to give us any more trouble now. Got Edward Milan locked up? He confessed everything, Margot.
So he did kill Jennifer and Brad?
Yes. But Harriet Hamilton was the mind and force behind those murders, Margot. She told him she could never be happy or help him with his career as long as Jennifer lived.
And she persuaded him to kill Bartholomew to cover that murder?
Yes. Jennifer came out early before the recital. Edward killed her in a fit of rage and left her for dead. But she managed to revive long enough to crash through those French doors.
Then Bartholomew must have followed Jennifer out and witnessed the murder. That's why his gloves were in that room. But, darling, why didn't he go right to the police?
He's afraid of being involved in a murder that might ruin his screen career. Besides, he did get rid of Jennifer for him at a most convenient time.
Oh. What about Viceroy's blue cornflower petals?
Miss Hamilton planted those on Brad's party just as Viceroy claimed she had.
Well, darling, I still get weak every time I think of you facing that brutal killer. How on earth did you subdue him?
I nearly didn't, Margot. I felt the terrific strength in those two hands. Then suddenly, when he looked down at Mrs. Hamilton's dead body, a strange thing happened. Strength seemed to leave him. It was as if all the power Edward Milan possessed left him. The moment he realized he'd murdered Harriet Hamilton, the one person who had made him strong.
Time?
We hope you enjoyed this program from RadioClassics.com. Programs are copyright their respective owners. All rights reserved.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Didn't know that. There
neither
you go.
Did I.
Threw me right off my game. Who's that dame? How'd she get in here? That's not CW.
Yeah, she's usually telling us what to do. Her and the British chick. Yeah.
At least it gave me the opportunity to be ready.
Uh-oh.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents another Garless Moral of the Story.
apologies to Gar. One thing we learned is that Margot Lane can scream in every single episode of The Shadow. But if you really want a soothing scream, you must have a goat. Absolutely.
That was the quick flush. All right. Got to conserve water.
Oh, really? It was raining in New York, so they don't have to conserve right now. No?
I don't know. Who knows? But, hey, we got some time. And Brother Gar, I hope your system gets fixed, you know? Let's get it
fixed. Yep.
That's good.
He's got it on the operating table.
Yeah. Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Sutures. Cotton. Cotton!
I cotton to you, too.
Stooges flashback. It's where you get slapped with a big blob of wet cotton. Anyway. We got time.
Somebody's got to. We got time. Shall we go to Wheel?
Wheel. Why not?
All right. Well, you're closer to it than I am. I'm feeling lazy tonight.
Right.
Why don't you get up there and spin that wheel?
I think I can reach in from here. Let me give it a tug.
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Hello, Don.
Hi, Don.
Oh, hello, everybody. Hello. Well, Jack, here's those ice cream puffs, or those cream puffs that you asked me to bring over.
Don, I know you haven't got much to do this week, but don't pad your car. One word isn't going to help it any, you know. What was it you said, Don? What?
I said, here are those cream puffs that you asked me to bring over.
Cream? What are these for?
Well, you phoned me this morning and asked me to bring over some cream puffs.
I asked you for earmuffs. It's cold in New York. The silliest thing I ever heard of.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack. I'm sorry I stumbled and misunderstood you.
That's all right. Mary, put these cream puffs in my suitcase. I'll eat them on the plane.
A waiter. Waiter.
Yes.
Oh, him again. Now, let's see.
Waiter, I'll have a chip sweet sam.
Well, she'll have a chip sweet sam.
Swiss cheese sandwich.
Yes, ma'am. One Swiss cheese sandwich.
One Swiss cheese. Holy, holy.
Well, here I come with a piano bunch. Listen, where did piano bend? Although the other way would be good, too. Here I come with the piano bunch. Just as good one way or the other. I say, here I come with a piano bench, or here I come with a piano bunch. Hey, where do you want me to sit, Mary?
Right here. Your name's on the place card.
Well, place cards and everything. How did Phil know where to sit? He can't read.
I put his picture on the plate.
Oh.
That's your fault, bunch. You got people thinking I can't read.
Oh, yeah? Let me see you write your name.
Don't change the subject. I'm talking about reading.
I thought so.
Mary, all the networks are nice. And it's about time people realize that there's no animosity between them.
There isn't?
Of course not. Now, take CBS. They even put Johnson's wax on the floor.
Jack, CBS didn't put it there. So many stars have come over, they've cracked it in on their heads.
On their heads? On their shoes? They must be acrobats somehow. How do you like them? We got acrobats now walk in on their heads. Shoo.
Dominique stars come over, they tracked you in.
Oh, we don't have to do a crew. It doesn't matter how it got there. The fact that it's not there proves that. Rochester, here's the studio lot. Turn right in.
There you go. A bunch of bloopers Dave put together from Jack Benny.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
See, that's part of why I like doing a live show, the opportunity to take advantage of a moment. And those things are more priceless than anything you can.
Okay, glub, glub. Come on, take a break. Take a breath. And we should hear you come back in a second. Almost.
How about now?
Yes, there you're back.
Good. I'm back. I'm not blubbling. No, I was saying that's why I like doing live radio, because of the opportunity to take advantage of a moment, you know?
Okay.
To be spontaneous. Which, those things are sometimes far more precious than anything you can write ahead of time.
Oh, my. I tell you what. And then they play off of it like that. There was one coming up, just like four different people got into the act of whatever wrong was said. I can't wait to get to that one.
Yeah,
I might not be able to continue the show after that one. I just, first time I heard it, I was almost literally on the floor.
Yeah.
So stinking funny.
it's almost like, whose line is it anyways when you can improvise like that off of a mistake?
Jack Benny wasn't a writer, but he sure was an improviser when it came along. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Fred Allen, he could write, but he still had writers with him. But Jack Benny was not a writer. George Burns was not a writer, but he knew what was funny, what wasn't. So he kind of was, in a sense, the head writer, even though he didn't really write for that.
Yeah. He probably got approval or knew how to tweak a joke to make it work.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he did.
George,
so much fun
that
stuff.
He wasn't around very long.
What do we got going
though
on tomorrow night, Dale?
Whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio.
Continuing with our motif of murder music with some Sherlock Holmes. What? And
ooh,
the Whistler. He'll be whistling.
The Whistler.
Yeah, the Whistler. Yeah.
And I have some bad news about tomorrow night, Dale.
What's the matter with tomorrow night?
Well, tomorrow night I may have a whole new set. Music facts, Dave facts.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. That's horrible. so tune in, won't you? And we got Halloween coming up. We're going to have a musical show, some Halloween-oriented. It's certainly horror-oriented. We're going to have a party. That's right, three Halloween party-themed radio programs. We're going to do a tribute to E.A. Poe, Edgar Allan, you know. And,
yep,
of course, our annual trip through War of the Worlds with yet another new adaptation Dave has acquired.
Wait. E.A. Poe, isn't that Evan Albert Poe? No?
I don't like that first name. it's Edgar.
Okay. We can go with that.
No. Thank you, Fogsbane, for listening and joining us and putting up with us for an hour and a half. Hour and a half. Oh, no, 2 hours. Oh, God, you poor guy. Well,
yeah,
he'll recover.
Yeah.
He'll recover and be back hopefully tomorrow for us to join you with more murder music.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Here we go.
When next we meet in Frankenstone,
don't
come alone.
Can you dig it?
Man, good night. Already. it wasn't too far off.
No.
Oh,
I had
gosh,
it ending at a different time than you did, but It always is that way. Thanks, Blog Talk. Kicked me off twice tonight, Blog Talk.
Yep, that dirty. I don't know if you noticed, I got real tired there for a minute.
You got real tired?
Yeah, I'm getting a second wind here, but oh my gosh. I've been up since real early.
Fuzzy. I'll get you up again, huh?
Yeah, Fuzzy got me up real early. Dad, need to go out. And he did. He wasn't just horsing around. Dad, what good the logs do?
Well, better than stepping in it.
Yep.
In the living room rug, yeah.
No, he's very good about that. He's well trained in that regard.
Yep.
He's a good house dog. Good house dog. That likes to ramble well.
He's better housebroken than some people I know.
Yes. Probably me in a few years. and I'm going to do it out of spite.
Just because you can.
Just because I can. I'm not going anywhere. What the heck? Oh, no. Yeah, no.
Yep. Well, sir, I probably need to bug off here. I got a couple things I got to get before it gets too late. But,
yeah, me too. I gotta get some rest. I'm being cat slapped now.
Well, before the dog gets you up again, yeah.
Oh, he will.
He will.
I want to go outside
All
and
right.
jump around a little bit.
There you go. All right, sir. Well,
right.
I look forward to being back again tomorrow for the Whistler and for Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Basil Rathbone only, and that's tomorrow night here. I'm here, you house.
Basil. All right.
Oh, I'll take
all
the
right. Bring in the Durani. We got this big giant Durani we have to pull in the room.
Yep.
Here it is.
Yep. There he is.
Good night. Bring an arm pulling that thing
it's
in.
It's time to say good night.
Good night, Joe.
Good night, Uncle Fred.
Good night, John Boy.
And it's time for Toodaloo.
Cause we
are evil, up we the same, and it could think could do. Good night. Good night.
Do you mind turning off the radio?